All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're going to focus tonight a little bit in Eretz Hashem on the Haggadah. And I want to share with you, I don't know why, but for some reason, out of all the amazing and interesting things that are in the Haggadah, I always find myself drawn to one particular episode. Well, not to one particular episode, but a number of different episodes, one in particular. Take a look at number one. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So Elazar ben Azariah said the following. Hare ani kaben shivim shana, velo zachisi shete amer yitzias yitzayim balelos. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I am like 70 years old, and I was not privileged to remember the Exodus, shete amer yitzias yitzayim balelos, at night, ad shadar sheben zomos. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah seems to be saying, I'm an older person already, I'm almost 70 years old, and I never merited, and we'll discuss this word choice in just a little bit, I never merited to remember the Exodus at night, ad shadarsha ben Zoma, until the sage Ben Zoma made the following exposition, Shene Amar, Leman Tiskor Esyom Tseischa Me'eretz Yisrayim Kol Yimechayecha. So Ben Zoma quoted the verse, and the verse says, in order that you shall remember the day that you left Egypt, or I should say, you should remember the day you left Egypt all the days of your life. So Yimechayecha Yomim, so the days of your life means the days, Kol Yimechayecha, all the days of your life, refers to halelos, the nights as well. The chachamim say, "Yimei chayecha olam hazeh, ko yimei chayecha lavi lemosam Mashiach." We don't have to worry about the chachamim for now. So again, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah seems to be teaching us a very interesting idea. He explains that all the days of my life, I never mentioned the Exodus in the evening until Ben Zoma came along. And then Ben Zoma came along, and Ben Zoma interpreted a particular verse in the Torah to explain that one must remember the Exodus by day as well as by night. Interesting idea. There's only one major problem, which is if you take a look at number two. So number two is from the Sefer Yushalayim Moadel, which is written by Rav Avigdor Nevenzal. Rav Nevenzal is the Rav of the old city of Yushalayim. He writes the following. He says, L'chor, by paragraph A, L'chora piskazu eina shayeches lalaylozeh. Now, if you think about this, says Rav Nevenzal, this particular section has absolutely nothing to do with the Haggadah. Now, what does this mean? Or I should say, nothing to do with Pesach night. How so? He says, Udin klali hanoig b'meshach kolimos hashana kulam ve'eino din hashayich ba'ofen miyuchal ha'azah. Let me give you this a little bit of background. Remember, when it comes to the Exodus, there are two different mitzvos. There's a mitzvah of what's called Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim and Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. There's a mitzvah to remember the Exodus, and there's a mitzvah to recall the story of the Exodus. What's the distinction between these two mitzvos? So on a very simple level, the mitzvah of Sipur is the mitzvah we have every single... I think there are seats. So if you want, there's a seat over here. Seat over here. Seat over here. Okay. So the interesting part over here is the following. The mitzvah of Zechira, which is a mitzvah that we fulfill each and every night, is a mitzvah simply to recall the Exodus. There's just the mitzvah every single night, I should say every single day and every single night, to remember the Exodus. How do we fulfill this particular mitzvah? How do we fulfill it? Shema. Every single day in Shema, we say Shema by day, we say Shema by night, and every single time that we speak about, when we recite Shema, we always make reference to the Exodus. That's the mitzvah of Zechira. How do you fulfill that mitzvah? On a very simple level. You think to yourself, you say to yourself that God took us out of Egypt, and one has fulfilled their obligation. On the night of the Seder, there's an additional obligation. That additional obligation is the mitzvah of Sipur. The mitzvah of Sipur, the mitzvah of telling the story of the Exodus, requires us to go into greater depth. It is not enough just simply to remember the Exodus, but one must delve into the story as much as possible. So Rav Nevenzal asks a very simple question. In number one, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is referencing the mitzvah of Zechira. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is referencing the mitzvah to remember the Exodus, the mitzvah that we have every single day. Rav Nevenzal asks, why is this brought here in the Haggadah when the mitzvah of the Leil HaSeder is to what? Is Haggadah Sipur, is to engage in an in-depth exposition of the narrative of the Exodus. It's to go ahead and delve deep into the story. So essentially what Rav Neven Zal is saying is, this is a very nice story, and very interesting, I get it, it's something I remember the Exodus, but this is not the way we're supposed to remember the Exodus on the night of the Seder. This is just a superficial remembrance, which we fulfill each and every day through Shema, but again, on the Seder night, we are supposed to go in depth. So in essence, Rav Neven Zal is asking, what is this section doing here? What is the point of this particular narrative? Ultimately, why is it included? So he goes on. So I'll just, if you look at the end of paragraph A, he quotes over here from the, I think there's a seat. I think this seat is open over here, right? Is that one he's sitting over here? Okay. So he gives an interesting answer. He explains the following. He quotes the Rambam. Now, if you look at the end of paragraph A, Rambam Menusach HaGadol, Hagir Sehi, Amar Lahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Now, I didn't put this for you on your sheet, but you know, what's the section immediately preceding this? So you know this because we studied that section last year together. You remember that, right? Good, excellent. Right, remember again, that's the section of the great rabbinic sages having their Seder together in Bnei Brak. So Rabbi Akiva is there, Rabbi Eliezer is there, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is there. They're all having their Seder together in Bnei Brak. And we spoke about this because that's an exceptionally strange episode, right? Why is it so strange? Why are all of these rabbis having their Seder together in Bnei Brak? Right, first of all, again, other than Rabbi Akiva, none of them lived in Bnei Brak. It's a strange story. Why else? Who's missing from that story? Their families, right? Where are their families? Why are they having Seder away from their families? Remember again, the Pesach Seder, to whatever degree possible, is supposed to be an intergenerational experience. Yet these rabbis are having Seder together. Their families are not there. Children are not there. Grandchildren, no one's there. So we discussed that. But with all this, leaving the strangeness of that episode aside, the Rambam understands that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shared this particular insight in number one, at that Seder that occurred in Bnei Brak. Therefore, the Rambam explains that the only reason this is included is because this conversation occurred during that Seder in Bnei Brak. So that this section, number one, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's statement, although it is not related to the mitzvah of Sipur, the mitzvah of telling over the Exodus narrative, that is the mitzvah of Seder night, because it was said in that Seder in Bnei Brak, which is the previous section of Haggadah, the Baal Haggadah, the one who assembled the Haggadah, or those who assembled the Haggadah, decided to include this section as well. Rav Neven Zal then goes on, and he explains quite beautifully that, I think there's a seat, if you want, right up here. You can come already. Right? So, we need like in the parking garages, you know, like the green arrows that are open. So, Rav Neven Zal goes ahead, and Rav Neven Zal explains that the idea is the following. He goes on, he explains that this happens to deal with the interplay between the mitzvah of Zechira and the mitzvah of Sipur. So Rav Neven Zal explains something quite beautiful. He says, thank you much. He says, interestingly enough, and this is actually quite dramatic, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but I'll just share it with you. He says that the Pesach Seder is supposed to be so impactful. That what? That it carries you throughout the year. You want to know the metric by which to judge a successful Pesach Seder, if it inspires you every single day until next Pesach, that was a successful Seder. You see, it's interesting because we often gauge a successful Seder as the ability to stay awake until the end. Hey, Mamish, if I'm awake at the end, I'm coherent at the end, that was a successful Seder. So that's definitely a part of success. It's a necessary part of success. But a deeper level, of Neven Zal says so beautifully, the goal of a Pesach Seder, Pesach, and this is a different discussion, but Pesach itself contains enough inspiration to fuel the entire year. And I just want to point this out. That's not just true in the Seder. The preparations for Pesach, if done the right way, are inspirational as well. Now, I know I usually get a lot of dirty looks when I say things like this, right? Because again, I mentioned this, you know, in the witch shiur last week, that, you know, if you dread Pesach, or if Pesach is a source of incredible stress, then I'm telling you, you're doing something wrong. The ways of the Torah are exceptionally pleasant. Everything in Yiddishkeit is pleasant. And if something is anxiety provoking for you, if when you hear Pesach, you have like PTSD, then at the end of the day, there's something wrong in the way you're preparing for Pesach, and there's something wrong in your understanding of Pesach. Because everything in Yiddishkeit is beautiful. Now, it doesn't mean it's not a lot of work, right? It doesn't mean it's not a lot of effort. It doesn't mean that it doesn't require an incredible amount of exertion. But when we understand the deeper meaning behind the things that we do, everything is inspirational. It's not just the Leil HaSeder that's inspirational, not just the Chol HaMoed that's inspirational, not just Yom Tov. The preparations, if we understand what it is that we're doing, every piece of it is inspirational. Pesach contains enough inspiration for the entire year. Says Rav Nevinzal, here's the way people work. Inspiration often goes in peaks and valleys. So none of us really ever live a life of constant inspiration. So even though Pesach may contain enough inspiration to fuel me throughout the entire year, for lack of a better term, I need like spiritual booster shots. I need a little, you know, like spiritual Red Bull, you know, to take me as I'm going through life. I need something to pick me up a little bit. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, that's where the mitzvah of Zechira comes in. Pesach technically gives me enough energy to sustain myself spiritually, to inspire me throughout the year. But it's almost like a little bit of a spiritual booster shot every day as we remember the Exodus. By remembering the Exodus, what we're essentially doing is we're connecting to the Pesach experience. And by reconnecting to the Pesach experience, ultimately, again, we are tapping into that reservoir of spirituality, and we have the ability to lead inspired lives. Therefore, says Rav Nevinzal, that's why this statement Rav Elazar ben Azariah is included in the Haggadah. Because even though this statement Rav Elazar ben Azariah, again, has nothing to do with the Seder night. Because in the Seder night, which mitzvah do we have? Quick review. Which mitzvah? Sipur. In depth. in-depth retelling over of the Exodus narrative. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is speaking about the mitzvah of Zechira, the daily mitzvah we have to remember the Exodus, which one could fulfill by simply stating, God took us out of Egypt. What's the connection between the two? The Sipur, the Seder, gives us enough spiritual energy for an entire year. Remembering the Exodus each and every day allows us to tap in to that Pesach experience. So just it gives you an idea as to what we have coming ahead of us in just a week and a half. Right? We have enough spiritual energy over 7-8 days of Pesach to be able to sustain us throughout an entire year. But of course it requires of us, A, to prepare, because anything in life is only going to be meaningful if you prepare for it, and B, to try to our best to understand the deeper meaning of all the things that we are doing. So that's Rav Nevinzal. If you take a look at number 3, so it's a beautiful Haggadah called the Dvar Aaron. Dvar Aaron was written by the Rav of a city called Chop. Chop was a small city in Hungary. So the Rav of that city wrote this Haggadah called the Dvar Aaron. He writes the following. Take a look at paragraph Beis. He picks up on something very interesting. If you look at Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's wording, it's very dramatic. Right? He says, Hare ani keben shivim shana, I'm like 70 years old. And we'll discuss what that means in just a little bit. Velo zachisi. Velo zachisi means, and I never merited. I never merited. Shet te amar yitzias ram balelos. That the Exodus should be remembered at night until Ben Zoma came along. So look what the Dvar Aaron writes. Paragraph B. Velo zachisi. Perish, he quotes here from the Bartunura. So listen to this, a little bit of backdrop. We're going to discuss Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in just a moment. But just before we get into his personal story, what he's saying is like this. I have been doing battle with the sages my whole life. Right? I've been locked in a fierce debate with the sages. What's the fierce debate about? Do we have an obligation to remember the Exodus at night? That's the fierce debate. Do we have an obligation to remember the Exodus at night? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, I've been saying all these years, yes, yes, yes. And the Chachamim are saying, no, you do not have an obligation to remember the Exodus at night. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, velo zachisi, I have never been able to win the argument until Ben Zoma came along. So what is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah essentially saying? You know how like sometimes you could tell your child something multiple times, and they won't believe you. But when they hear it from someone who's not their parent, suddenly again, oh, did you hear what that person just said? Did I hear it? I've been clapping you over the head with this for 20 years. Of course I've heard it. But you know, that's the way people work. For whatever the reason, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, I've been saying for years, I've been advancing my position, that you're supposed to remember the Exodus at night, and no one ever accepted my position. But then Ben Zoma came along, and suddenly everyone believed it, or everyone accepted it, because now Ben Zoma was saying it also. Okay, there's only one problem. If you take a look at letter C. So again, before we go on, so if I were to ask you the relationship between Ben Zoma and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, what would you say? An age relationship between the two of them, what would you say? We would have thought Ben Zoma was older. Meaning, the picture you have in your mind now is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is a young man, which he is, we'll discuss. And so he was advancing a particular halachic position, and it wasn't really gaining any traction in the rabbinic community. Then what happened? So an elder statesman, Ben Zoma, comes along. He advances the same position that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah himself has been saying all of these years, but no one was attentive to. But now Ben Zoma says it, so what happens? Now everyone's paying attention. There's only one problem. Now, when I talk about Ben Zoma, what strikes you as being exceptionally strange?
Why is he called Ben Zoma?
What's his name? Right? His name is not Ben, right? It's not like short for Benjamin, right? Meaning, like, Ben Zoma means the son of Zoma. So, okay, that's nice. What's his name? So take a look at paragraph C. Ben Zoma, Shimon Shimon. So first of all, you should know his name was Shimon. He goes on, he says, Ulafi Shelo Herich Yamim, Velo Nismach Shiyan Nikra Rebbe. So amazingly enough, Ben Zoma died young. You see, many of the sages who were known by the names of their fathers until a certain age, don't stand here. There are many sages who were known by the names of their fathers until a certain age, before they established their own identity. So before they established their own identity, their own independent identity, they were simply known by the names of their father. The Divar Ara makes an amazing observation. Ben Zoma died young. How do we know Ben Zoma died young? Because forever he is memorialized as Ben Zoma. He never reached the age where he became known on his own as Shimon ben Zoma, Rabban Shimon ben Zoma, but just Ben Zoma. Which then leads us with a very profound question, which is what's happening over here. So it turns out then, Ben Zoma was not older than Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So now we thought what was happening over here is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is keep on saying, remember the Exodus, remember the Exodus night, and the Chacham are saying, no. And then no one listens to him until Ben Zoma comes on the scene, Ben Zoma agrees with him, and now suddenly everyone yields to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's opinion. But why would Ben Zoma be any more authoritative than Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? In fact, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was older than Ben Zoma. And yet, again, for some reason, it's Ben Zoma's argument that carries the day. What's happening here? Take a look at number four. Rabbi Lau, in his commentary on the Haggadah, says something quite beautiful. He says, "Echad migidolei parshani haTorah b'doros hachronim hamalbim nifchar likohunas harabonas harishon shlo begil tsar biyoser v'hayush irakach." So the Malbim, again, who doesn't know the Malbim? Right? So Rabbi Meir ben Leibush, the Malbim, one of the most incredible commentaries that we have on Tanakh, the Malbim was appointed to his first rabbinical position at a very young age. And there were many in the community who did not approve of his appointment. How can you appoint someone so young? No life experience, right? Not a big enough Talmud Chacham. How can you appoint someone so young? So tzitit b'fnei ma'albim, esaketa shlefaneinu, v'hiksha, madua mishtamish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah b'signon ha'nodya v'ayotzi dofen, lo zachisi, v'od, v'chid Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shay rosh yeshiva migdoli chachme yisro, paragraph base. Lo yada lidrosh es drashosh ol seben zoma, umar akesher lo uvdishu posef marinik ben shivim shana. So the Malbim in his first drasha, that Shabbos, the Malbim was a very brave man. Now, he was very brave in that the Malbim always spoke his mind. Now, that led to the Malbim not being able to hold on to any one rabbinic position too long. Because in the Malbim, quite literally, he went from community to community. He was also an outspoken opponent of the reform movement that was gaining traction. So he had many, many powerful enemies. He was never afraid to speak his mind. As a result, he was often on the move. So the Malbim, the first Trasha, can you imagine this? The first Trasha, he knows that there are people that don't want him there, you know, not because of anything he did, but because of his age. It was age discrimination. They didn't want him because he was too young. So his first Trasha, that first Shabbos, he decides to discuss this particular section in the Haggadah. And he asks, number one, why does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah have to say, Hari ani k'ben shivim shana, like 70 years old? Number two, why does he have to use that lashon of velo zachisi? I never merited having my opinion accepted. And number three, why does Ben Zoma's opinion turn the tide for the acceptance of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's opinion? And get ready for this. This is so profound. Paragraph Gimel. Ulam hatshuva ne'utza b'mila k'ben. Misuper b'gimara shekasher minu es Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah l'nesius. Hu haya rak ben shmona esrei. V'toyim l'kabalas atafkid ekev kilo atzar. Ulaz az samach seir laban bezikno v'haya nira k'ben shimshana. So we'll discuss this more in depth. That when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is asked to essentially assume the position as the Rosh Yeshiva, as ultimately the head of the academy, one of the heads of the Jewish people, he was only 18 years old. And one of the great things that he worried about was his young age. His young age. So miraculously, what happened? As soon as he assumed the position of leadership, as soon as he said yes, he became gray. You know, the Ben Yoyada, the Marasha says, everybody thinks this is a miracle, says it's not a miracle. It's a natural consequence of accepting upon yourself the yoke of Jewish leadership. It is not easy to be a Jewish leader. So as such, again, he aged. He aged literally, quite literally. He went gray overnight as a result of his newfound responsibility. But he was 18 years old. Watch this. Amar Eifo, paragraph Dalet. Amar Eifo, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Yadati tamid es hadrasha azu. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, listen, you know what? I know I'm only 18. But for the last number of years, I have been trying to advance this particular halachic position. That you should remember the Exodus at night. You should remember the Exodus at night. But lo zachisi sheyishmu ledvarai kevan shani tsayer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I know why no one listened to me. Why did no one listen to me? Why? Because I'm young. And it's fine. I get it. All the other rabbis are much older, much more seasoned, much greater scholars. And so pretty much my opinion was discounted because I was young. However, you know when my opinion was finally accepted? Ad Shedarsha Ben Zoma. So now watch this incredible interpretation. See, everyone thinks that Ben Zoma is just simply echoing the same halachic position of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But suggest the Malbim, Kavanoso Lidrashasha Miforsemesh Ben Zoma Mesechus Avos. No. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is referring to a different teaching of Ben Zoma. Which teaching of Ben Zoma is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah referring to? The teaching in Pirkei Avos, Perek Dalet Mishnah Aleph, Ben Zoma Omer, Eiz Hu Chacham, who is wise, Halomeid Mikol Adam. Ben Zoma was the one who said, who is wise, who is able to learn from every individual. Shnei Amar, Mikom Alamdai Hiskalti, Ukisha Ben Zoma Darash Esadrasha Hazu, Va'aleha Lo Hayacholek, Azne Osu Hachachamim Lishmoa, Gam Es Devarai Shali, Hatsoir Liyamim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says something amazing. For years, I've been trying to advance halachic position. The halachic position that you should go ahead and you should say, that you should remember the Exodus at night. But no one listened to me. And why did no one listen to me? Why? One simple reason, which is, I'm young. Until Ben Zoma came along. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Ben Zoma was young also. So what did Ben Zoma contribute? Because Ben Zoma contributed a ruling on which no one disputes. Eizu Chacham, who is wise, Halomeit Mikol Adam. The wise person is the one who realizes that there is something to be learned from every single individual. Even if someone is not as wise as I am, even if someone doesn't have as much life experience as I do, even if someone clearly has much less Torah knowledge than I do, even if all of that is true, there is something to be learned from every single individual. You just need A, the humility, and B, a willingness to learn from the other, and there is no telling how you could be enriched. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, I've been trying for years to teach my colleagues something, but they were never receptive until Ben Zoma came along and said, You should really try to learn from everyone. Only once Ben Zoma said that, did my rabbinic colleagues become receptive to finally learning from me. And once they became receptive, it opened up so many doors for them. It's a beautiful lesson. Why is it here in the Haggadah? Why is it here in the Haggadah? And the simple answer is, because the Pesach Seder represents for us a most novel learning experience. Meaning, let's be honest for just a moment. Perhaps a person has the following Seder situation, right? The kids come home from school, and what happens? You know, it's great, the kids are preparing, but we're amongst friends, so we'll speak openly and honestly. What happens when the kids come to the Seder table? What happens? All right, I'm going to say it. You get one look at that binder, and you say, Ribono Shel Olam. We're not doing all of this tonight. Right, right. Meaning, like, really? Like, what is it, like 5 Siddurim this year? And the binder is this thick. And what happens? Okay, so by Halach Ma'anya, there are 57 Divrei Torah, and everybody's great, it's so wonderful. And Manishtana, everybody wants to ask it in 15 different languages, and this one wants to do it. And you know, as the Seder goes a little bit later, by the time you get to Avadim Hayinu, you're figuring out, like, if I just skip a page, will anyone notice? Right? Meaning, what could I? And it's almost like, you know, it's like Lahavdil, it's like the Baal Kori by the time you get to the fifth Haman. Right? Okay, it's fine, Rasha. But then by I get to the fifth Haman, the Baal Kori is like, all right, I need to get this one in under the radar. Yeah. So my question is now, you know, how much of the Haggadah could I get in before the kids realize what I'm up to so that I could go ahead and move a little bit? And if it's not the kids, it's uncle this one or aunt this one or this one always has something to say. And the beautiful part about the Pesach Seder, what the Haggadah is trying to sensitize us to, is just sit back, open your ears, open your hearts, because there's no telling what you could learn. Yeah, it might go on for a little while, and your stomach's grumbling, but there is no learning experience throughout the entire year like the Pesach Seder. And I take it one step further. Sometimes you go to a Pesach Seder, and it might be you're the most learned person there. So sometimes there's Yetzirah to lead, and I'm going to be the purveyor and conveyor of all information. That's not what the Seder is about. Every single Jew is a world unto themselves. Every single Jew is a neshama bursting with beautiful spiritual energy. And if you open up the floor and you invite other people to share, one thing is for sure, which is you will walk away enriched. You will walk away with some incredible life lesson. You will walk away with something, if nothing else, if nothing else. I speak about this often, but I'm always somewhat jealous of my children, because sometimes when I see them give over a Dvar Torah or an idea, there's so much excitement. Or you know what happens? They'll give over some medrash, right? So what happens? What do the adults do? What do the adults do when like the wild medrash comes flying out of their cute little mouths? What do the adults do? Really, like for this, I'm paying tuition, right? So this is what this crazy medrash, which is not to be understood literally. It's not a literal. It's a metaphor. And the kids are saying, but this and this and this. And you know what? You have to take a step back. You know what you say to yourself? I wish I had that passion. I wish I had that passion. I wish a medrash made me so excited. Because you know what? I'm a lot more high maintenance than a wild medrash. It takes a lot more for me to feel fulfilled, a lot more to feel high, but it shouldn't. It shouldn't. I could learn from my children the beauty of bringing that binder, right? Tati, do you like my binder? What I want to say is, really? Like, you couldn't have put, like, a little more effort into that? You know, stuff is falling off. It's glitter is everywhere, right? But you know what? I should have so much excitement when I hold my Haggadah as they have when they hold theirs. Pesach is all about the opportunity to stop being the teacher and start being the student. Pesach is the opportunity for us to realize you have to humble yourself a little bit. You have to humble yourself. Say, you know what, I don't know everything. And to be receptive to learning just a little bit. But if you are, there's no telling to what. And I want to be clear, you know, some of us have, you know, a lot of different guests and maybe some obscure guests. Everyone, every single person is a world unto themselves and has something unique to contribute. All you need to do is give them the space to share. And there is no telling what you could gain. And that's why, says Rabbi Lau, says the Dvar Aaron, that's why this section of Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is included in the Haggadah. Even though, again, this section, this particular teaching of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, has nothing to do with the Pesach Seder. It has to do with every other night of the year but Pesach. But the message that's being conveyed is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is telling us, I want to tell you, I'm the Rosh Yeshiva now. But for years, no one ever listens. You know why? Because no one ever assumed that a young man ever had anything meaningful to share, especially in the company of other great rabbanim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, they were wrong. I always had something to share. I always had something meaningful to contribute, but they never let me until Ben Zoma came along. And only once Ben Zoma said, Ezu Chacham Halomed Nikal Adam, when it was a teaching, when it was a ruling, when it was a Mishnah, then suddenly everyone realized, wow, maybe Elazar ben Azariah does have something to share. And the moment that they humbled themselves a little bit, opened themselves a little bit, I was able to share with them a wealth of information. The role of this section in the Haggadah to get us to be attentive to the beautiful words, to the beautiful excitement, to the incredible energy that's happening all around us. What we could learn from our family, what we could learn from our friends, what we could learn from those who are at our Seder is often much more than we could ever teach to someone else. That's the first lesson. Take a look, however, let's go a little bit further. Take a look at number five. So in order to understand this, we're going to take one step back. Yes?
Hi. So the obligation to recall a night, right?
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. You're right. Meaning, you're saying we could have done even without that phrase. You could have learned... Good. Hold on to that. Excellent. Take a look at number five. Says the Gemara Maseches of Sochem. The Gemara writes, B'chol dar v'adar, chayiv adil miros esasel ki yotzim mitzrayim. What is the goal of the Leil HaSeder? What's the goal? The goal is to feel free. So you say to yourself, well, okay, I feel free right now, right, as long as Rabbi Silber doesn't go too long with the shir and hold me hostage. I feel free. I feel, right, Baruch Hashem, perhaps many of us feel free most of the time. Baruch Hashem, we are free. So what does it mean? So, you know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh brings down. He says, Mitzrayim is from the Lashon of Meitzar. Meitzar means the depths or the constraints. So ultimately, again, everyone has their Mitzrayim. Everyone has their challenges. Everyone has those things that constrain them. Everyone has those shackles that hold them tethered to something. And what's the goal of the Seder night? The goal of the Seder night is to feel free, to feel unshackled. The same way that we go ahead on the Seder night, we relive, we reenact, and we experience our emancipation from Egypt. It's not just Egypt. Each of us has our personal Egypt. Each of us has our personal Mitzrayim. And the goal of the Seder night is to feel freed from all of those personal constraints, to feel freed from all of that personal bondage. It's a beautiful idea. One of my favorite ideas from Pesach, from the Baal Shem Tov. There's only one problem, which is, you go to sleep and come the next morning. What happens? You're right back in the same situation. So what exactly is the obligation? I mean, okay, let's say I could even get to this level. You know, with enough wine, you could get to any level. Right? So I've got four cups, right? I'm going to work on it. I'm going to feel free. I'm going to feel free. Incredible. The question is, on a panoramic life level, so what have I accomplished? I felt free tonight. But I know in the back of my mind, so let's say somehow, by the way, understand this level. Imagine, by this is the power of the night of the Seder. Imagine for a moment having a few hours where you had no problems. Right? Imagine for a few hours allowing yourself to leave your own personal bondage. Imagine for a few hours being not carefree, because carefree is the wrong word, but feeling enlightened because the burdens and the shackles have been removed from me. That is the Leil HaSeder. Even if you're able to get to that level, what do I do about the fact that in some back recess of my mind, I know that tomorrow morning is business as usual. Tomorrow morning, all of those problems are going to be right back. So it's nice, I could have a few hour respite, like a furlough from my life problems. But what about the fact that tomorrow morning, everything is essentially the way it's been? So take a look at number six. To appreciate or to understand this, We're going to use this section of Elazar ben Azariah, but we're going to delve a little bit into the story of Elazar ben Azariah. So remember, again, let me give you the background to this story. The head of the yeshiva is being deposed, the man by the name of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel is being replaced for reasons that we're not going to get into right now. Rabbi Gamliel, actually, he publicly embarrassed one of the students, and therefore, again, they're essentially firing him from his position as Rosh Yeshiva. They began the search to decide who is going to be the new Rosh Yeshiva. So what happens? They start going through a whole list, and there were a number of exceptional candidates. Rabbi Akiva was in the running for this number. So finally, they whittled down the list. They come to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So why do they want? Elanuk May, number six, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Du chacham vu ashev vu asir le'ezra. So first of all, he's wise. He's wealthy. Now, you'll say to yourself, well, before he gets wealthy, and he is a direct descendant of Ezra. So he's wise as Tamat Chacham. He has chus avos, right? He has good pedigree. He's direct descendant of Ezra, and he's wealthy. Why is wealthy important? So first of all, he's above temptation. He's above temptation, right? Can't bribe him. But also because at the end of the day, whether we admit it or not, wealth commands respect. People respect wealth. You want the Rosh Yeshiva to be respected in all corners. Not everybody's going to respect him for his piety. Not everybody's going to respect him, ultimately, again, for his Torah knowledge. But you could be sure about one thing. Most people respect money. Most people respect wealth. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is alamailus, right? He has everything, Talmid Chacham, beautiful pedigree, as well as very wealthy. Fine. So what happens? Skip down a little bit. Asu, third line. Asu va'amrulei, nechalei lemar de lehaveresh mesifta. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, they offer him the job. Will you become the Rosh Yeshiva? So what happens? Amrulei, so Amrulehu, so he's a smart man. What does he say? Ezel ve'imlach ve'in shibesi. So what is smart man, what does he answer? Let me go ask my wife. Let me ask my wife. I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the position. Let me ask my wife. Now, all kidding aside, he also understood that positions in Jewish communal leadership are not simply a job, but again, it's a lifestyle. It's a life. So he has no right to accept that position without first conferring to his wife. So what happens? So he comes home to his wife. Amrele, she says to him, Dilma ma'avrinlach. So, you know, she's a very wise woman. Mrs. Elazar ben Azariah says to her, listen, you know, if you want to know about a particular position, the best thing to look at is what? Is what? The predecessor. What happened to the last guy in this position? And that's a pretty good indication about, you know, the nature of the balabatim, the nature of the position. Now remember again, the last man who occupied the position of Rabbi Gamliel, what happened to him? He was fired. So Mrs. Elazar ben Azariah says to her husband, why do you want this headache? Meaning, if they fired Rabbi Gamliel, who was older and wiser than you, you're going to give, the Shabbos rush is going to go too long one Shabbos, and what's going to happen? They're going to fire you also, or something else, you're going to say something, inevitably at some point, you're going to say something that displeases someone. So what's going to happen when you displease? They're going to fire you. They're going to fire you. So why would you take this position? To which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says something amazing. He says, "Lishtam." I'm in number six, three lines from the bottom. "Lishtamish inish yoma chada bakasa demurka ulamachar litbar." Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah gives a very profound statement. It is better to use a glass of beautiful crystal for one day, even if tomorrow it is going to break. Better to use a golden goblet of crystal for one day, a beautiful crystal goblet for one day, even if it's going to break tomorrow, then essentially never use it at all. So the Gemara then goes on, hold on to that statement for just a moment. She says to him, you have no gray hair. Meaning what she's saying to him is, they're not going to respect you, you're too young. Which she was right, she understood these dynamics, to which the Gemara says, a miracle occurred, he turned gray overnight, and that's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah often says, Hare ani kaben shivim shana. I am like 70 years old, because he wasn't 70. How old was he? He was 18 years old. But miraculously, again, he had the appearance of a 70-year-old as a result of his gray hair. So his response to his wife is incredibly amazing. Better for a person to use the beautiful crystal goblet one day, even if tomorrow it's going to break. Now hold on to that for just a moment. Take a look at number seven. The Gemara then goes on. What was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's first order of business? What's the first thing he did? Tana, Osa hayom salkua l'shomer ha-pesach. The first order of business Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did was, there used to be a guard who was stationed by the entranceway of the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, remove the guard. Whoever wants to come into the Beis Medrash could come into the Beis Medrash. Now, why was there a guard by the entrance of the Beis Medrash? Because Rabbi Gamliel used to say, Kol Talmid Shein Tocho Kibaro Lo Yikanes LeBeis HaMedrash. Because Rabbi Gamliel used to say, any student who is not genuine, any student whose inside is not like his outside, me cannot come into the Beis Medrash. In other words, that Rabbi Gamliel was very selective as to who he allowed in the Beis Medrash. There was a guard, and only if you were a genuine person, only if you were the same, meaning it's easy to put on an external display of piety, whereas on the inside, a person can be spiritually or morally bankrupt. So Rabbi Gamliel said, only students who are as genuine on the inside as they are on the outside have permission to enter into the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did not subscribe to this. He removed the guard and he said, what? What? Anyone who wants to enter the Beis Medrash could come and enter the Beis Medrash. So let's analyze this for just a moment. You know, the Amshin of Rabbi, I actually quoted this in Shul a few weeks ago. The Amshin of Rabbi Zecher Tzadik Livracha asks a simple question. He said, how could a guard know who is Tocho Kibar? In other words, what does the Gemara say? Rabbi Gamliel put a guard by the entrance of the Beis Medrash, right? And what happens? The guard determines if you are genuine. If your inside is like your outside, what is it? Are you genuine? Yes. Okay, come inside. Yeah, how exactly do you measure someone's genuinity? I know that's not a word, but I'm going to use it. Right? How do you measure that? To which the Amshin of Rabbi says so beautifully, that what ended up happening was the following. Really, what Rabbi Gamliel did is he blocked entry into the Beis Medrash. The front doors were closed, chained closed, and there was a guard sitting in front of it. So what happened? People who were not genuine, what did they do when they saw the Beis Medrash was closed? They went home. But people who really wanted it badly enough found a way inside the building. They found an open window. They found a door that was a little bit ajar. Whatever they had to do, they waited till the guard wasn't looking. Whatever they had to do to find their way in, they found their way in. So in essence, only those Talmidim who were Tocham Kibarom, only those who were truly genuine, made their way into the Beis Medrash. Those who didn't want it badly enough, saw the door, saw the chain, saw the guards, I tried, I showed up, I get an A for effort, and then just simply went home. Comes along Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah takes away the guard. Why? Because we begin to see Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's Shita Sachaim, his approach to life. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says the following. If in life you are going to only aspire for things, or if in life you're only going to try things for which you have guaranteed success, what's going to happen? You'll never try anything. Why? Because in life, there is no guaranteed success. Similarly, if you're going to wait in life to go ahead and attempt to do something in a purely genuine way, then guess what? You're going to miss out on an incredible number of opportunities because most of us, let's be honest, most of us are not truly genuine. Most of us have our good times and our difficult times. And when we're good, we're not all good. But the good news is when we're bad, we're not all bad either. If you're going to wait for a person to be genuine until you let them into the Beis Medrash, you're going to have a very empty Beis Medrash. What did Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah say to his wife? His wife said to him, listen, my dear husband, you know, every good conversation, marital conversation begins usually with, my dear husband, I love you so much. But what the heck are you thinking? Right? What's the matter with you? You want to take this position? You really want to do this? They're going to throw you out. They're going to treat you like a piece of garbage. Because look at what happened to Rabbi Gamliel. You're going to do something that puts you on their bad side, and then you are done. To which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, my dear wife, who I love so much, I appreciate your input. I am not blind to the risks of this position. But no risk, no gain. If you're not willing to put yourself out there, if you're not willing to try, if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves and put in the effort with absolutely no guarantees for success, then you get nothing out of life. And that's what he says. Today, I have the beautiful crystal goblet. Today I have the beautiful crystal goblet. I know full well that the only guarantee I have is that I have it today. And by the way, not even today. Now. I don't even know what's going to happen in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and 2 hours. The only guarantee I have in life is now. Right now, this opportunity is in front of me. So I have a choice. I can analyze the opportunity. Well, let's talk about all the ways it could go wrong, or all the ways it may not work out, and let's measure that against the probability for success. And chances are, if you go ahead and you take any life initiative, and you measure the probability for failure against the probability for success, I would venture to say the probability for failure always wins. The probability for failure always eclipses the probability for success. Because that is the nature of life. There are so many unknowns. There are so many variables. There are so many curveballs. The statistical probability of failure almost always, at least on paper, eclipses the statistical probability of success. So what do you do with that reality? What do you do? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, what I choose to do is maximize my present circumstances, recognizing that I cannot control my future. Right now I have the crystal goblet. Right now I have the beautiful opportunity. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take it. I'm going to maximize it. And I'll figure out the future as it comes. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Rabbi Gamliel, you're preaching a model where you have to be perfect to get into the Beis Medrash. Well, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, under that model, I myself can't get into the Beis Medrash either. Perfection cannot be a prerequisite for dynamic life activity. At the end of the day, what you just need to do is put your foot forward and try. You have to try to do your best in life. You have to try to maximize your circumstances, recognizing that the only thing you really can control is the here and now. And this is such an incredibly important lesson. Because so many times in life, we miss out on so many beautiful opportunities. Why? Because we like to analyze our life opportunities, right? So we go ahead, opportunity presents itself, so let's discuss. Well, there's this, there's that. Remember again, if you overanalyze any life opportunity, what happens? Right? Passes you by, because remember, overanalysis or analysis paralysis only leads to one reality, one conclusion, which is inaction. Inaction. And if you overanalyze anything, the things that could go wrong, the things that chas v'shalom could be so terrible are impossible to even enumerate. Elazar ben Azariah says, if you have the glass goblet, you have the crystal goblet, take it and use it. You're right, there are no guarantees for tomorrow. There are no guarantees for next year. So instead of constantly being preoccupied with trying to figure out what is going to happen, find a way to figure out to maximize what is. Get yourself into the Beis Medrash. Accomplish whatever you can, knowing full well that life is filled with uncertainties, but don't let those uncertainties paralyze you. Instead, accept them, recognize them, try to navigate with them, but concurrently seize all of your present opportunities. And perhaps that's the pshat in this idea of the Haggadah. What does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah say? He says, Harei ani k'ben shivim shana. If you look back in number 1 for just a moment. Harei ani k'ben shivim shana. Perhaps metaphorically we could understand Yitzias Mitzrayim means what? As we said before, personal redemption. So Elazar ben Azariah says, you know, I've had so many beautiful opportunities, so many wonderful moments in life. But you know what happened? Those opportunities were great by day, but I was unable to always be consistent. I wasn't able to always take them into the night. I wasn't always able to maximize all of my opportunities to the fullest. I wasn't always able to be consistent in all of the ways that I wanted in life. And I was upset at myself, and I was disappointed in myself. But I realized that the goal of life is not consistency. Because consistency sometimes is beyond our control. We should aspire to it. But sometimes consistency, I can't control that. I can't control that because I don't control a lot of the factors in life. What I do control is how I maximize my present moment. What I do control is how I maximize the opportunities that are at hand right now without paying too much attention to what could or should or perhaps will be. That's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying. Throughout my life, my short life, I had many personal redemptive moments that were wonderful by day, but for some reason I was unable to perpetuate into the night, either because I wasn't consistent or because at the end of the day life's not consistent. But I've come to learn that what do you do in those type of situations? You just get back up the next morning and you just try again. So when we feel free on the night of the Seder, does feeling free on the night of the Seder change your life? When you wake up the next morning, after having such a beautiful and uplifting Seder, you've taken in the messages of all of those at your Seder, you've learned from every single person, you're enlightened. You're enlightened, Mamish, you don't even need to go to sleep. All you want to do is say Shir HaShirim all night long. That's how wonderful it is. But you end up dozing off in between chapters of Shir HaShirim. You wake up the next morning, right? There's matzah on your forehead. You fell asleep against the table. And are your problems solved? No. What about the freedom of last night? You're right. You had freedom last night. And today you're back again. But you know what you showed yourself last night? You know what you showed yourself at the night of the Seder? That you have the ability to maximize your current opportunities. And you have the ability to maximize those current opportunities without becoming hyper-focused on what the future will or may or may not bring. That's the job of the Jew. The Jew realizes that at the end of the day, we spend so much time trying to control, forecast, and figure out what the future holds that we end up missing out on all of our beautiful contemporary and present opportunities. The Leil HaSeder teaches us that maximize the present, become free, feel like a Ben Chorin, leave your own personal Egypt. I know it's only for a couple of hours and it's not going to solve your problems, but the Seder teaches us ultimately again to maximize our present and to stop thinking so much constantly about the future. And so it turns out that this little paragraph, which at first glance seems to be a bit unexciting, really teaches us three profound lessons. Number one, lesson number one, the Pesach Seder contains within it enough energy to give us our spirituality for the year. And all we need to do is every single day tap into the Exodus in order to bring out some of that energy. Lesson number two is that there is something to be learned from everyone. Open your heart, open your soul, open your ears to what is happening around you at the Seder. And there is no telling what you could learn. And lesson number three, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah teaches us, use the crystal goblet while you have it. Right? To use a better metaphor, you know, don't live life with plastic on the couches. What do I mean by that? You know, there are people that go, I remember this is my earliest childhood memory from my grandparents, Zichron Livracha, right? People live their life with plastic on the couches. And you know what ends up happening? All that ends up happening is, yes, the couches are always clean, but you never got to enjoy them. The couches were always clean, but you know, if the temperature goes above like 65, you can't sit on them, right? Because mamish, you meld into that plastic. People live life with plastic on the couches. Why? Because we don't want anything to spoil. Gotta keep it clean. Who says you have to keep it clean? Maybe life is about enjoying the couch. Maybe life is about saying, this is what I've got right now, maximize it. If something spills on it, I'll figure that out. I'll have to figure it out because there are spills and there are breakages all the time in life. Don't be the kind of person who loses out on their present because of some fear of what may occur in the future. Except the fact that we don't control that future. Not only do we not control the future, we don't even know what that future actually holds. So instead, if I don't know what the future holds, and I can't control that future, what do I do? There's only one alternative. Be Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Use the crystal goblet. Take the plastic off the couches and maximize the present. Feel like a malach, feel like a prince, feel like a queen. Feel free even just for a couple of hours on the Leil HaSeder. Know full well your problems are going to be there in the morning. But if you can get to the level where you feel truly free from your personal Mitzrayim, then you teach yourself that you have the ability to maximize your present. And if you become the kind of person who can maximize their present, there is no telling what kind of future you create for yourself. So we should be Zocha and Mirat Hashem to prepare properly for Pesach, to be able to enter into these days. It's so important because so often by the time we get to the Seder, we're so, especially the women, so exhausted, and understandably so, that just from weeks and weeks of activity, But it's important that we enter into the Seder with a mindset that we're able to enjoy it, that we're able to appreciate it, that we're able to experience it, that we're able to maximize those few hours and not think about what's going to come in the future. And halavai, in the zechus of maximizing our present, in the zechus of hearing all the beautiful voices around us, learning all of the lessons, may be zochem yeretz ashrina. I tell my children every single year that, you know, when you open up the door by Shvo Chamasa, our custom is that we open the door, our community, our collective custom is that we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi. Because remember that last part of the Seder, the first part of the Seder speaks about servitude, the middle speaks about redemption, and the last part of the Seder is about Mashiach. Before you open up that door, you have to really prepare yourself for the possibility that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be there. You have to open the door with the expectation that he's going to be there. And halavai we should be zocha, that in the zuchus of listening to all the beautiful voices and messages around our table, in the zuchus of finding the courage to maximize our present and stop thinking so much about the future, we should be zocha that Amir Tzashem, when we do open that door, we should be privileged to see the beautiful, smiling countenance of Eliyahu HaNavi. We should be zocha Amir Tzashem to hear him say the most beautiful words that we so eagerly pine for, that the long wait is over. Mashiach is coming. This is your last Pesach in Galus. Follow me back to Yerushalayim. Follow me back to the Beis HaMikdash. And halavai we should be zocha to experience that in just a few days from now. Amen.